Tonight I'm speaking with vocalist Bobby Blitz Ellsworth from Thrash Legends Overkill. Hi Bobby, how are you doing today?
Alison, good to be on your show. Looking forward to it all day.
Oh, great stuff. Right then, okay, let's get started. So, to begin with, how are things generally in the Overkill camp and what's happening at the moment? I know you've just finished a North American tour with Symphony X, haven't you?
Yeah, kind of, our progressive brothers. I mean, we know these guys for a long period of time. My partner Didi had a studio / rehearsal hall, and Symphony X, I think, are his longest clients. They were there for over a decade, and we would be recording, you know, something that you'd find on Historikill or even all the way up to White Devil Armory, which is our last release, and Symphony X would be in the next room rehearsing. So, oh, you know, when we're all out in the hallway having a beer or sharing a pizza and talking sports and guitars, and so, you know, we were close to these guys prior to going out with them, so it was a really fun tour, one of those, you know, as you get older in the business, you just want tours that are smooth, no problems, no fights, so going out with friends is always kind of a good thing.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you had lots of fun.
Yeah, no doubt.
Cool. Okay, so of course you've just released your Historikill box set.
Yeah.
With 14 CDs in total, covering from 1995 to 2007, and it's a limited edition, so that's a really nice collector's piece for the fans. So can you tell me a bit more about it?
Well, you know, it's an era of metal that was probably not the most popular with regard to, you know, it being in any type of a limelight or spotlight. It was the underground, darker days when it comes to what business was about. You know, just prior to this, Metallica kind of changed the world with a bunch of their music, and they were being, you know, they were picked up by Elektra Records, and many of the other major labels followed suit. Us being signed to Atlantic Records from Megaforce, yeah. And it was like there's unlimited coffers of cash for promotion, and you could tell you were a horse, you know, and that's really what it was. You were a horse for these big labels, and you were supposed to make them cash.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about, you know, this type of music and thrash in general was that it was really hard to be. It's kind of hard to saddle a wild horse, you know? And what ended up happening was a lot of bands didn't follow suit with Metallica, and the majors started disposing of them when grunge came in, and they couldn't get rid of bands fast enough. You know, everybody either quit, I quit, I'm going home, that's it, or they went to smaller labels and started understanding that, hey, man, we came from the underground, that's where we should be. Yeah. And Overkill was one of those bands, you know, and because of that change, we started managing ourselves. We started taking our business and bringing the fences in and understanding that if we were smaller, we'd be less penetrable by the outside. If we were loose and on all sorts of, you know, unprotected ends, we could be cut off very easily. Mm. So we managed ourselves, cut some great deals, and that historical period is that era for us. It was great releases from the underground, regardless of the popularity. Just because it wasn't popular didn't mean it wasn't worth doing. I mean, this was something we loved doing. So I think it's that great kind of crash course for the fan that has gotten on board in 2008, 2009. You know, maybe our last three releases where popularity is not waned anymore, but being, you know, it's exalted, it's back to some degree. And whether it's back or not doesn't make the records better. So here's this era that you can experience when it wasn't the easiest thing to do and not the most popular, but still solid, really upscale type thrash releases.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Cool. And of course, it's your first worldwide release through Nuclear Blast as well.
That's correct. We've recently signed with them worldwide. And, you know, this was kind of our idea. We, you know, when I said that we started managing ourselves, we started changing the deals. We learned a lot from our managers. They went on to do other really great things. Still friends of ours, still advisors. And, you know, one guy went on to Sony, ran a publishing company, I mean, huge things. And to have that type of knowledge at your disposal, They were advising us to, you know, license these records, get them back, get them back. They're going to be, someday they're going to be valuable to somebody. Yeah. And that's what we started doing. And we think that value lies in the fact that you can, again, get that crash course of an entire era. And really one of my most proud eras. Just because it's hard to do doesn't mean it sucks or undoable. Mm. It means that it's, you know, if you can push through, it really tests, let's say, the mettle of, you know, the guys in the band.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, cool. So I'm going to take you back a bit. Of course, Overkill are a heavy metal institution and have been a major force in the thrash world for more than 30 years now. So can you tell me how it was for you starting out as a band in 1980 in New Jersey? How was the scene back then?
Well, you know, I mean, we were born of the new wave of British heavy metal meets Motorhead meets the New York punk scene. I mean, we were fans of... you know, those types of genres, you know, and I think if you put the new wave of British heavy metal and, you know, the Ramones, the Dead Boys, Iggy Pop, and the Heartbreakers in a bag, and you spun it all around, you get Overkill when you threw it out on the floor. I mean, that's where it kind of came from, yeah. You know, for us, that, you know, there was no rules. It was, we were a cover band playing stuff off the Ace of Spades and Young, Loud, and Snotty by the Dead Boys. So it was, you know, it was kind of, you know, we would present ourselves as both types of bands, and eventually we morphed into one. And I think what was cool about it was that it was happening in other places, too. It was happening in, you know, what's called the Ruhrpott in Germany, around Essen, Germany, with a band called Creator and Sodom. And it was happening on the West Coast with Exodus and Metallica and Megadeth and Slayer, and all this stuff was kind of happening, but there was no rules.
Yeah,
that was the coolest thing about it. I mean, there was no blueprint. There was nothing to follow. I mean, there was a music blueprint to follow, but not with regard to this music. We weren't joining something. We were part of the creation of
yeah.
it. So it was, you know, that was the cool thing about it. So how was it? It was chaos. You know? But it was killer, you know?
Yeah.
It was about how far can you push the envelope? That's what it was about.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that made it happen, if I have to think back, is the fact that there was no World Wide Web. You know, Al
no.
Gore did not show his face and say, I'm a genius and I've discovered the internet and now you will all be connected. It was a big world and it was a frontier and we had to wear sneakers in our holes to get our music heard. You know, we had to walk into places and shake hands and knock on doors and be insulted and, you know, kind of makes you the people you are when that happens. So it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, great. So, talking a bit about the new wave of British heavy metal, obviously I'm English and I'm a lover of all that era, the classic British metal bands. Who, you've mentioned Motorhead. Who else were you really into at that time who had an impression on you?
Well, I remember the first two Maiden records having a big impression on us. I remember a band called Angel Witch we loved.
Yeah.
Obviously Tank, Tigers of Pantang. You know, there was, I remember, you know, getting the new wave of British heavy metal double CD with everybody on it from that era.
Yeah.
You know, that was, and, you know, and I got it probably a decade later and it had come out and I thought to myself, I've heard every one of these bands, you know, I've heard them all down at our rehearsal studios.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, there was something very common to it, you know, whether it be Blitzkrieg or whether it be Tank, you know, just some really, really cool stuff that showed musicianship with attitude.
Yeah.
And then when you started adding, you know, I mean, we were from New York, so we were selfish New Jersey, actually. But we would go into New York and we would hang out on a place called St. Mark's Place, dressed like the Ramones, looking for them, you know?
Yeah.
And then we're thinking, you add Angel Witch to the Ramones, you're going to have something really special here with regard to presentation.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, cool stuff. Great. And, of course, some of the bands are still around, like Saxon and Motorhead, Maiden. They're all still going strong, releasing new albums, so...
And solid records, too.
Mm.
I mean, Black Magic is a great Motorhead release. Loved the Aftershock, too. I mean, it's just really cool. I run into the Saxon guys all the time. I mean, just some fun stuff out there to see that, it, you know, that the value of such bands... has transcended generations. It wasn't just my generation. They hit generations beyond that. Grandpas and sons and grandsons, you know, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. Fantastic. Okay, right. So you've got some Killfest dates coming up. You've got South America in December 1st. The fans there are well known for being crazy metalheads. So what's it like playing an Overkill show there?
Well, it's unique. Because I don't think it's always common. You know, that's kind of the idea. You know, when we tour the States and we're doing, you know, 30 dates twice for a record and then some, you know, extra festivals and a short run here, we're probably doing 80 to, 95 shows in the U.S. over the course of a year. You add Europe to it, it's common. They get people touring, they'll have, you know, 6 choices a month with regard to metal in Hamburg or in London or in Paris or Barcelona to go see. But I think in South America they don't. So, you know, they really put on their, they put on their crazy. I think that would be a way to
put it. Oh, that's great.
It goes over the top. I mean, it's just, it's passionate and obviously appreciated by us. I mean, you know, this whole thing was about, you know, the whole thing that, you know, I always thought this was about was the energy that the band could portray. But when the audience has that energy, it becomes a feed back and forth, you know, where you try to outdo each other with energy. So it's a push and a pull. But I think, the winners are the band and the audience for sure in a South American live show.
Yeah. Okay, so have you got some favourite places that you like to play in the world? You must have been more or less everywhere.
Well, first and foremost, I love playing our area because I usually know half the crowd by first name.
Yeah.
I think we just did 2,300 people in New York, and I probably know 1,200 of them by...
Fantastic.
I remember coming out playing the Best Buy Theater. Lena Except come over and do the show with us, and we had 2,100 in the audience, and I said, I know half of you by first name, and the other half cursed me because I threw up on you. It's very personal to some degree, but I do like playing the major cities. I do like doing festivals. I like the Londons, the Berlins or Munichs. I like the Parises, Madrids. Love Tokyo.
Yeah.
I mean, I love doing that big major hub for whatever country we're going to, because that's where you kind of feel. You feel the pulse of the country in those cities. You know, it's great seeing everything, but to feel the pulse of the country always gets the heart beating faster.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Okay, so you mentioned festivals. Obviously, you were in the UK for Bloodstock this summer. So how do the UK fans compare to other countries? Do you see much difference? I know you've mentioned the South American fans are in a class of their own, but do you see much difference with crowd reactions and stuff like that in the different countries?
You know, going to the UK, I was during those darker days of metal, there wasn't many invites for us, but we kept pushing forward through it, I think. And the UK has kind of opened their doors to us again, and we've done some good things there. Mm-hmm. Did you see the show that we had done in Bloodstock?
Unfortunately not. No, I wasn't there on the Friday, just the Sunday. So I missed you.
Well, we came out after the second song, and I said, if you don't know, we are slower cousins from New Jersey, so how about a little respect? And I think that type of humor, first and foremost, is appreciated in the UK.
Yeah, so, definitely.
But I think that once you're past the protocol and what's necessary, that, you know, the band is relaxed. This is our second time at Bloodstock, and what I noticed about it the first time, I said, these are some of the more knowledgeable metalheads in Europe, and to endear yourself to them, you have to be relaxed and put this forward. And I think we did that. And I think that when we are relaxed and just do what we do best, you know, it can be bombastic. It's all guns blazing. It doesn't matter who's in front of us, that the tanks keep rolling. You know, and if that's the approach, I think Bloodstock picked it up. And I think we had a wonderful success at it both times, but this one even more so than the first.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Okay, so of course in April, you're back hitting the UK shores again with Killfest UK, along with Polish death metal legends Vader. So how do you feel about that?
We like those guys. We've had them out on the road with us before.
Right.
And, you know, so it was an easy tour. I think we kind of have the same principles. You know, the older I get in this scene, the least amount of problems I want. I want to do the shows. I want to have a good time doing it. I'll put the work in beforehand, and that actually becomes the vacation or the payoff for the work that is, you know, done prior. So we land on the shores over there on the 5th of April. We'll be starting in Birmingham and going through. There's 5 shows in England. There's 1 in Glasgow and 2 over on the Emerald Isle.
Yeah.
So brilliant. Yeah, we'll be there for a 10-day period. And it should be fun for us. We're going to be peppering it with some old stuff, leaning on some new stuff, but you'll hear a lot of the Horoscope record as well as the Feel of Fire record, accompanied by the Last Renew records.
Oh, fantastic. So is there anything you particularly like about visiting England? Do you like the food or the beer or anything like that?
I like the food, the beer, the girls. I mean, I like the whole thing. I mean, it's just the fact that the language is relatively similar. I know that your country thinks that we've ruined your language, but you know, for me, at least I can understand people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it kind of takes the fun to a new height. You know that I adore the sense of humor. I remember saying to somebody after the first time I got back from England, I said, these people will make fun of you when you're asking how to get to the underground. It's awesome.
Yeah, you've got to have a sense of humor.
but it's pleasant, you know, and yeah. It's for sure not biting or totally derogatory. I think it's, you know, the culture itself is something that is so similar to our own, and obviously comes from the islands,
yeah.
You know, but either through immigration or through law or through traditions, we've adopted so many of the things that, you know, our ancestors have had. My coming from Cork in Ireland, for instance, that it's just part of the American fabric, and I think American guys who tour enough over there can recognize that and embrace it.
Yeah. So do you still have family in Ireland?
No, we don't. Everybody got out after the potato problem.
Okay, right then, so let's go on to your album. Your latest and 17th studio album, White Devil Armory, was released in 2014, and I hear that you're already planning the next. Can you give me any information or updates on that?
Well, I'm more of the immediate guy. My partner Dee Dee plans, you know, we get together and we confirm plans for the future. But we're looking more so toward the end of 16, October, trying to jump ourselves into a great time to release, to be able to do what we really like doing, which is playing live shows. I mean, the studio's fun, don't get me wrong, but the studio is action versus reaction, but the payoff is the live show, especially for me personally. I mean, I found my drug, and it happens behind monitors in front of amplifiers and drums. I mean, that's where I like to be.
Yeah.
So we're looking toward October, mid-October for release in 16, and then immediate touring to follow. But when it comes to writing, there's something about this band that I can only speak for ourselves. I mean, a lot of guys during that darker days of metal just kind of quit. You know, it was just, you know, how come nobody recognizes my genius? You know, well, because you're sitting in your parents' basement playing your guitar, chain smoking. That's what you're playing.
Yeah.
that's the idea. So I kind of think that our work ethic has been instilled from the area we grew up in. And it's, you know, our parents and grandparents kind of handed us this, you know, if you work hard and do it with a smile, you'll be the happiest man on the face of the earth. You know, you'll find something you love, and you'll take it to new places. And I think that when it comes to writing, that's the way we kind of look at it, that it's about action versus reaction, but we never stop writing. It's not that we sit down and say, oh, it's time to write.
Yeah.
It's really more time to assemble what we've all written at that point. And that's where we are right now. We're right before the assembly point. that the riffs will become songs and the melody lines will, you know, they will dance over the top of those riffs. And so that's where we are. So the writing right now is, I'm not going to say we're deep into it, but there is a plethora, a wealth of Seth, the D, myself, Dave Linscast for this next record.
Oh, fantastic. Sounds like you're in a very creative mode then. Okay, so of course Mark Tornillo of Accept, who's also from New Jersey, guested on a bonus track, Miss Misery, on this last album. So can we expect any more collaborations in the future?
You know, I don't know that. I mean, it was, you know, Mark was just perfect for that song. Mm. You know, he's a Jersey guy, you know. And Jersey guys can smell Jersey guys in a room. I could be at Bloodstock and I could put my nose in the air and say there's three other guys from Jersey here.
Do you all smell?
But it's just a common scent, you know. It's like, we're like dogs. That's why the nose goes up in the air. But, you know, Mark was a perfect choice for that song.
Yeah.
But when it comes to collaboration, we've never really been big collaborators. We had Randy Blythe come once and do, he did a song called Skull and Bones on a record called Immortalis. And Mark was a perfect choice for this song. I've been in touch with him a bunch. We've known him since the early days. And he's just a great dude. We were like, you know, who else sounds like Dan McCaffrey from Nazareth besides Mark Tornillo? And I said, well, maybe me a little bit. And it was, you know, to get my voice and Mark's there together, it sounded almost like two guys that were cut from the, you know, the Brian Johnson, Bon Scott era of doing things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, separately with uniqueness to each voice, but then we're coming together and singing it as a duet actually created a third entity. And, you know, and that's what I loved about that track.
Mm.
But to say we've planned anything for the future, no, we haven't.
No. Okay, so talking of Accept, what do you think to the band? Do you listen to their stuff?
Yeah, I think Mark is an absolute uplifting, given them an uplifting experience, has given them, has retained their credibility, but has brought them into a fresh kind of a modern era with stuff like Stalingrad or Blind Rage.
Yeah.
I think he's just the perfect choice. I mean, and he's pissing vinegar, too. I mean, he's the real deal, this guy. I mean, this is a rock and roll guy, and everybody here knew it before the world knew it. You know, if when they said Udo left, everybody went Tornillo. Tornillo.
Yeah.
He's got to get this gig. He's the one.
Yeah.
And he's a great dude. He's involved me in charity work that he's done. He's really a give back kind of person. We're both now involved with Rock Against Dystrophy.
That's
a big thing, you know, and it makes us we become great friends with the guy who runs it, who has the disease or the affliction. And you know, the guy's a pain in the ass sometimes. You know, run right over him with his wheelchair. But it's you know, the other side of it, we say, geez, the ball's on this kid. And I say, well, you know something, Mark, that's why I like him.
So is that an annual thing that you do now then?
We're involved with One Jersey throughout, One in New Jersey yearly. I take his the Rock Against Dystrophy t-shirts down the road. It's become the specific charity to Overkill. And I also go to hockey games with him, so it's, you know, it's just kind of, we've become friends, so it's not really the charity as much as helping out a friend, and it's to work for us, you know, really well, you know, with regard to, you know, being able to give something back to, you know, those who are metalheads in this community, so.
Yeah, oh, that's brilliant. Okay, so do you take any interest in the younger metal bands around today? Is there any that you particularly like?
Well, you know something, I can't say brand new ones. I like, there's a band out of Finland that's, I think, are on their second record now called Lost Society. I thought had, quite a bunch of snot. I said, you know, these guys have taken the blueprint from the 80s and are trying to just take it a step further.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the idea. I mean, you can't just take the blueprint and just fit yourself to it. You have to take it somewhere else. You have to change the plan.
Yeah.
And I saw something like that with them. I was a big Evile fan, and I'm, you know, I'd like to see what they do now that they're going to be back on the map, because I thought that those guys were the ones, and you can't really call them a young band at this point, but I thought that those guys were going to be the ones to grab the flag. Mm. You know, this was it's supposed to be a young man's game, but obviously experience, like myself or like the Testament guys or Exodus, it says something, you know, and the young bands inspire the bands like ourselves to say, hey, wait a second, that's not the way it's supposed to be done. You know, I'm sure how it's supposed to be done. I'm really curious to see what they do once they regroup. So sure, I mean, I have my finger on the pulse, but I'm not going to say that I'm YouTube searching every new release that comes out.
Of course not, you don't have time for that, I'm sure. Okay, I guess you've seen a lot of changes in the metal world over the years since you've started out. It's quite different now, I guess.
Well, for sure. I mean, just when you know, the start was, and probably one of the greatest things, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, was that we had to learn how to shake hands, you know. Mm. And I think, you know, there has to be a certain amount of ego that goes along with this. And I don't mean it to excess, but I don't think a person can be thin-skinned back then. You had to understand people were going to say no, or I don't like you, or you suck. I mean, it was, you had to be able to shake hands, walk up to people, and be able to take, you know, 100 no's before you got one yes.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of what makes the people. I have this great story that came from the early days when we had demoed our original songs, and there was the quintessential club in the area was a place called Lemoore's, and they had one in Brooklyn, and they had, now it opened one in Queens.
Mm.
And we would go every weekend, we would go to Lemoore's. There was no rehearsal, and we'd go to Lemoore's, and two would go to one, and two would go to the other. And we would take turns handing the owners our press packages, right?
Yeah.
And it was my turn, I was in Queens, and it was two brothers, and it was George, the younger brother. And my buddy, I think it was a guitar player, said, there he is. And he goes, you got to get him this time. And I ran up to him with my press package, and I said, Mr. Parente, I'm Bobby Blitz from Overkill, and I'd like you to have this press package. And he put his hand over his eyes and shook his head, and he goes, kid, I've got 100 of your fucking press packages in my office. You're nice kids, but your band sucks. Well, in any case, 18 months later, they were managing us.
So it
worked. Somewhere in the tenacity won the day. Somewhere in there. Now, obviously, we got a record deal, and somebody was, like, paying attention to us, and these guys said, hey, we can't let this business opportunity go by. But they had for sure known us by this point.
Yeah.
So I think that was, you know, that's a big change to today. I mean, it's not about instant information. It was about paying bridge tolls, finding parking, and being able to be insulted by somebody. And continue to go. And we saw, you know, cassette tapes and vinyl, and when we saw the CD, and we saw the downloads. And I think one of the things that's necessary through all those changes is being able to reinvent yourself behind the scenes, you know, to be able to stay current, to not turn into that band that says, oh, that's not music. I mean, the band that says that's not music is really my grandfather. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the guy who says, you know, Bobby, all you're doing is making noise. Nobody's going to like this stuff. For God's sake, go get a job shoveling coal. You know? Well, that doesn't work. And if you're one of those bands that can't adjust to that as an older band, you're going to be left behind. So I think I've seen a lot of changes, but I think that we've been diligent enough to reinvent ourselves, or at least surround ourselves with, you know, people who are social media people and, you know, great attorneys, really good booking agents, knowing what the core needs to be to survive. Not survive, but let's say, you know, make headway in 2015.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Brilliant stuff. Okay, I've got a question from a fan. Brett in Canada says, the band were awesome when you played Winnipeg. Will you be going back?
We hope so. It was our first time there, you know. I always like the fact that you know, you get a new city to play. I mean, you feel it, you know. I mean, there's a quicker step everyone has that day. It's not, you know, it's not Washington D.C. again, or Montreal, or Toronto again. It's Winnipeg. This is new.
Yeah.
You know, we have some work to do here, boys. And I think that translates. And I think that once you solidify a relationship with a new city like Winnipeg, you always look forward to coming back. Not planned right now, but for sure I would think by the next time we come through North America that those guys will be on the itinerary.
Oh, cool. I will pass it on. Right, okay. So to finish off, would you like to leave a message for your fans and the listeners?
Well, I'd like to say this. It's been a great ride so far, and you guys have been the fuel for me. You will see us in the UK on the 5th of April, and we're looking forward. I hope you are as much, too.
Oh, thank you ever so much for your time, Bobby. It's been great talking to you.
Good. I'm glad I didn't hurry you, and thanks for being understanding earlier.
Oh, no worries. Thank you.